The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
The first taste of rare bourbon you finally got your hands on. That's nice. At Caskers.com, we make this experience easy. Caskers is a one-stop spirit curator with an impressive selection of exclusive, sought-after, rare, and household names in the realm of premium spirits and champagne. Discover the top flavors of the year now by going to Caskers.com and using code WELCOME10 for $10 off your first purchase. Get $10 off your first purchase with code WELCOME10 at Caskers.com.
You're listening to the most captivating podcast in iTunes. That's right, the Elite Man Podcast, where we turn average men into elite men every day. We interview the very best experts from the lifestyle, health, fitness, social, and even entrepreneurial worlds. And with their help, we give you some of the best advice on the planet. Subscribe now if you haven't already and enjoy the show. And oh yeah, if you really enjoy it, leave us a review. On today's episode, episode number 261, entitled How to Size People Up, Read Them Like a Book, and Predict Their Future Behavior, I chat with Robin Dreek. Robin Dreek is the former head of the FBI's Behavioral Analysis Program and the author of the new book, Sizing People Up. In today's episode, Robin talks about his career in the FBI and the incredible skills he learned while being the head of the FBI's Counterintelligence Behavior Analysis Program. He shares incredible tips and strategies for reading people instantly, understanding their body language, building rapport, inspiring trust and likability, and predicting their future behavior. Robin also talks about his six-step system for sizing people up and how to apply this to every area of your life. If you're wondering how to read people like a book and take your social skills, relationships, and success to the next level, check this episode out now. You are going to love it. The single greatest self-help book ever written was released just a few days ago, and if you for some crazy, odd, strange reason have not gotten yourself a copy yet, go to elitemindbook.com and order right now. As a matter of fact, order a few copies and give some to your friends and family because they will love it just as much as you, and it will change their lives just as much as your own. Again, go to elitemindbook.com, pick yourself up a copy of the single greatest self-help book ever written, Elite Mind. Hey, just a quick reminder, just about all the links that we reference throughout the episodes can be found within the show notes. So if you're listening on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, or if you're just listening directly on the website at elitemanmagazine.com, just scroll down to the bottom and you can see most of the show's links directly there. Just assume that all the links are affiliate links. Not all of them, but many of them are, but assume that they all are. And by you clicking on that link, it's just a small contribution to help continue the Elite Man Podcast. I don't get a ton of money out of the affiliate links that we have on there, but I do get a small, tiny percentage of what you end up purchasing with no extra charge on your end. So just think of it as a charity gift donation to the Elite Man Podcast for giving you tremendous content week in and week out. I sincerely appreciate when you purchase a book or product or service from one of these links, and so don't the authors and guests who come on the show and deliver their incredible value. So make sure you check out those show notes when you do want to make a purchase or check something out even further. It helps me out, it helps the guests out, and it helps the show out. All right, guys, we're live. It's Justin Stenstrom from Elite Man Magazine, and my guest today is Robin Dreek, the author of the book that was recently released called Sizing People Up, a Veteran FBI Agent's User Manual for Behavior Prediction. Robin, thanks so much for coming on the show, man.
Hey, Justin, I'm excited to be here with you. And Elite Man, you can't beat anything better than that, right?
The best of the best. Yep. I appreciate it, man. Yeah, I just told you a moment ago, too, I've been digging through your book the past few days. Actually started about a week ago and probably a few chapters in. I'm a slow reader as it is, but this book is really interesting. And I've been reading it last few nights right before bed, and it's like it's keeping me up a few minutes longer than I intended to because it's so good. It really is. And I love the concept of it. So just for anyone who hasn't listened to any of your stuff yet or maybe picked up the book because it just came out, just talk for a minute or two about what it is you do and what it is you used to do in the FBI.
Sure. So I'm Naval Academy grad, Marine Corps officer, went in the FBI in 97, and the entire time I worked counterintelligence, which basically meant my job was to recruit spies. And I eventually took over our behavioral analysis program team and ran that team for a number of years. And throughout the, you know, and so believe it or not, you know, looking at that background, you're thinking, all right, let's get ready for some great manipulation, subterfuge, and you know, and taking advantage of people. But there's, it's like furthest from the truth. You know, this is the, my third book I've written, and the others are all about our behavior that we need to do to inspire trust, because that's really what it comes down to, is you got to build trust in relationships with people. If you want to achieve anything, whether you're selling a product or a service or trying to recruit a spy, it's the same thing. Or whether you're working with the, you know, people in your, that your coworkers, your spouse, your kids, it's the same thing. You're building trust. And so this book was a compilation after my last one, which was The Code of Trust, which was all about, all right, what behaviors do I need to exhibit in order to inspire trust from others? And the more I focus on other people, the more I started realizing, wow, you know, human beings, they are all exceptionally predictable, because all human beings were genetically and biologically coded to, you know, work in our own best interests, which is safety, security, and prosperity from their point of view. So if I can figure out what that person thinks is in their best interest in the terms of safety, security, and prosperity, and I offer them resources in terms of those things, we're going to have a relationship starting to build. So that's where it all kind of came from.
Yeah. So were you like the first guy who was the head of the FBI's counterintelligence? Did you kind of start the thing, or how did that work out?
No. So actually, great question. Not a lot of people ask it. So yeah, there's lots of behavioral units inside the FBI, and all of them started with John Douglas and those people in the basements of Quantico years ago, that, you know, Silence of the Lambs was based off of and everything.
Yeah.
But in the world of counterintelligence, our team was formed in roughly 1990 to between 90 and 92. And it only had about six people on it. And these are elite counterintelligence agents. And one of actually a couple of them are still my great friends now. One of them is Joe Navarro, wrote the book What Everybody Is Saying, is a nonverbal expert. And Jack Schaefer is another one who wrote the book The Like Switch. And, yep. You know, I got on the team later. And so I was I was the third person actually ran the team.
Oh, nice. That's pretty cool. Yeah, I've heard of both of those guys, actually.
Yeah, good guys.
Really, really interesting stuff that they do. So they kind of like your mentors. They taught you all this stuff and told you like how to read people and basically understand like what they're saying with their body language better than pretty much anybody else out there.
So it's a fascinating thing. You know, when I came on the team, I initially got very fascinated by Joe's work with nonverbal behavior. I mean, I considered myself, you know, one of his prodigies on decoding nonverbal behavior. But Joe's primary line of work that he was focused on in counterintelligence, he did a lot of interviews. He did a lot of espionage investigations and a lot of interviews. And so he was using it for the purpose of the interview. Jack is a language expert, is a good way to put him. I mean, Jack is an elicitation expert. He is a word fanatic. And so he focused on words. And then my career kind of, you know, for what I got assigned to do, I was more primarily focused on the, you know, dealing and working with the human beings as, you know, as confidential human sources, or, you know, basically great patriots that helped the Bureau. And so I really had to kind of take both those tools, meld them into my own system for trust and relationship development. So each of us overlap in some things, but all three of us are kind of unique in the fact that we have a skill set that is specific to the things we had to do.
Nice. So I read the first chapter of the book, and it talks – and this is kind of what really got my attention and drew me in, the 9/11. Is that where a lot of this started, with a lot of your training? And I know you said it started back in 1990, but did you kind of come on around 9/11, and that's really what changed like your career at that point?
So I came in 1997, and, you know, got assigned work counterintelligence right away, working Russians in New York. And, you know, I was getting better at it. You know, again, you know, you look at that background I have, I love saying, you know, that I have that very typical hard charging type A personality. And if you're going to work in the world of counterintelligence, where you have to, you know, build trust and relationships, that kind of attitude is going to make you fail majestically at your job, because you can't convince anyone of anything. All you can do is hope to inspire them to want to. So you have to keep the focus on them. And so, you know, I was kind of learning the ropes. I was decent-ish. You know, I'd learned, you know, I was getting better by the time I got out of the Marine Corps. I mean, I had so many humbling moments in my life where I was so self-centered and trying to make myself look good instead of thinking about others and actually how you do that. How do you make a conversation about someone else? How do you build that trust? And it's not – I was forced to take that subjective art form and make it a paint-by-number with all these labels and meanings I give everything. So yeah, 9/11 was kind of a pinnacle with trying to – I had to accelerate something really fast, because I'd been working Russians. 9/11 happens, and so I called, you know, one of my, you know, folks I was in touch with. His name in the book is Leo, and I said, all right, we're done working Russians. Now we've got to work Middle released. And within, and I'd been in since 97 to 2001, so what, a little over four years. And, you know, kind of a junior guy. And Leo came back with the guy named in the book is Anon, and which was a relative of a ruler of one of the Middle East countries. And so here I am. I got this great opportunity to gather information and hopefully try to help save the world here. But I only had 4.5 years in. And so now became the balancing act of, can you trust Leo? Can you trust this guy Anon? And how do I get management to trust me with something so, you know, potentially high profile? So it was really a high stakes game of, without realizing at the time, hell, you're just doing a job. But it really became, you know, heightened that, you know, you always felt the weight of the world on you at that time. Like, I got to try to save the world. I got to do something. So yeah, that was the impetus of it.
No, that's awesome, man. It's a really interesting story too. I encourage people to pick up the book and just start diving in, because it drew me, and I'm probably going to end up finishing it in like a week or so. Maybe a little longer, because like I said, I am pretty slow. But
you're like me. I'm the same way. I like to relish books. I call them, yeah, not a slow reader. I relish them.
And, you know, audiobooks are huge nowadays, but it's a little different. I like reading the actual book. I like holding it and going through it. I'm not fast, which I wish I was a little faster at it, but I do enjoy the actual like holding of the book and taking my time with it, like you said.
I'm the same way.
So,
although if people do like the audiobook, I did read for the audiobook. Yeah. If you ever want to bore yourself to tears, you know, read your own book out loud to yourself for 3 days in a row, and that'll do it.
I literally just recorded it. I'm trying to get it edited now as we speak. It's a pain in the ass. It sucked, but you know, has to be done. It's a lot better when it's the author's voice, I feel like.
Yeah, me too. And you definitely, you know, because, you know, the book publishing process is so long. Heck, this manuscript was in 2 years ago.
Yeah, you know, me too.
Yeah, it's a good refresher on what you wrote.
Yeah, you got to read it all over again. I mean, I read it like probably 3-4 times anyways, and then you had to do the audio thing, which is another whole read. So, you know, at least you're touched up on what you got to know.
Yes, you are.
So you talk about in the book a six-step system for predicting someone's behavior based on their words, their goals, their actions, situation at hand. Can you break that down for us? I'm sure there's a lot of like incredible insights you can give us to body language and reading people, and I want to give the listener as much of that as possible. I know we got probably about an hour or so today, but I want to dive into as many of these like tidbits as possible to give away to the listener, because you could apply this, by the way, to any aspect of your life. You don't have to be an FBI, you know, counterintelligence agent to be using some of these techniques. You can use this in every walk of life, every day, and coming across any type of person, this is applicable to. But just on the six-step system, can you talk about what that is real quick?
Yeah, sure. And I can't agree with you more. This is for every aspect of life. I mean, I work with companies all the time. I just got back from a trip that, you know, this cold attacked me on from, you know, being in Toronto and New York. Because it you know, at the core of this book is about how to understand and other people at a much deeper level. How do you focus on them? Because the point of it is so I can it's called, you know, sizing people up for behavior prediction. But it's really about understanding people at a deep level, for the main purpose of so you can manage your expectations about what you can reasonably expect they're going to do, so that way you're never disappointed, and that way you never get frustrated, angry, resentment, all the negative emotions, so you can maintain that good, healthy relationship. And so six signs are really pretty simple, and we do them every day, but when you give things label and meaning, you recognize them faster. That's why I call it that new car effect. It's like I bought a Toyota Tundra truck, you know, a number of years ago, and all of a sudden, poof, 300 people in my town bought the same truck. It felt like that because I started seeing it everywhere. Because, you know, we've seen that. You buy a car, you start seeing the same make and model because it has labels and meaning. So anyway, the first sign is vesting. You know, what vesting means is the individual you're interacting with, you know, demonstrating through the words, actions, and intentions that they're as equally invested in your success as they are their own. So like in the workplace, I mean, and in the book we have 10 tells for and 10 tells against, you know, lots of, you know, behavioral observations you can make on it. But in general, is this person demonstrating that they're vested in your success? Are they giving you project opportunities? Are they sending you to training? Are they including you in meetings? You know, is it an inclusive environment that includes you, that shows that they're vested in you being successful as much as themselves? Yeah. The second one's longevity. You know, similar in some ways, but, you know, longevity means, you know, hey, these people actually remember your name. They start including you in traditions, you know, and long-term planning projects. They give you projects that might take anywhere from, you know, maybe 6 to 12 months or even longer instead of just nothing. And, you know, so that's demonstrating that they see you here for the long haul. Reliability is the next one. Reliability is a really simple one to think of in terms of, all right, the guy put this on his resume. He says he can do this. Does he actually have the competence to do it and the skill sets? And does he have the tenacity to follow through on it? Mm-hmm. And so that's where reliability comes in. Actions. Actions is a really easy one because actions, basically this is patterns of key behaviors. In other words, if I observe someone doing something a certain way once, twice, or three times, the likelihood of them doing it the same way the fourth and fifth time is pretty high, unless there's a new outside stimulus to it. So I'm looking for key behaviors. Language. Language is a great one to me because language kind of bridges the gap between the code of trust and our behavior that we want to do to inspire trust and sizing people up. So basically, if you want to build affiliate, you know, build trust with people, what human beings, all human beings are seeking and craving is to be belong to meaningful groups and organizations and to be valued by the same. It's our ancient genetic coding, because if you weren't part of a tribe, the likelihood of you passing on your genes and genetics to others was slim to none. So we're always seeking to be valued and affiliated. And so the language you use to do that is really simple. You seek the thoughts and opinions of others, because we only seek thoughts and opinions of people we value. You talk in terms of their priorities, because here's another guarantee. If I'm not talking in terms of your priorities, which are your needs, wants, dreams, aspirations, basically your safety, security, and prosperity, you're not listening. Third, I'm validating you without judging. In other words, I never argue context. You have a certain point of view of the world, mine might be different. But if I argue that context, shields up. It's a guarantee. So I validate. And finally, if appropriate, I give you choices. And so when you do one of those four things, you're demonstrating value, demonstrate affiliation, and that person's brains, the neurocenters, you know, full of dopamine, serotonin, oxytocin, bloodstream, they're firing. And so now what I'm looking for from the other person, so I'm looking, are they using that language with me? So that's sign five. So in other words, are they talking in terms of me or themselves? And finally, sign six is stability. What I mean there is emotional stability. When faced with stress, anxiety, resentment, frustration, you know, basically emotional hijacking or crazy brain, can they maintain cognitive thought or do they go off the rails?
Yeah, that's awesome, man. There's a lot there. And
yeah, there is. There's more fun. It's crazy.
This is like a whole language in and of itself, is trying to learn all like the body language and all the break. Because it's so, you could literally dive into every single one of these steps and probably make a whole episode, podcast episode, talking about them. And I'm sure you legitimately could do that. But like just looking at it from sort of a 30,000 foot view, how do you apply some of these things to, say, an everyday situation where like you come across somebody or you have an interview with the boss, or you're just interacting with coworkers or whatever? Like, how do you use like all these things in a simplistic manner that sure. is applicable like in certain moments? Because if you think about it, you could like think about all these things in your head and you know, plan them all out. Yeah, get overwhelmed. But then like in a real life situation, it's just like too much to do. How do you break it down so that it's easier to use?
Absolutely. And you don't want to do that anyway, because the last thing you want to do is be thinking about what you're trying to do, because then you're not paying attention to them.
Yeah.
Because the most important thing in any conversation and dialogue is to listen to what the other person is telling you is their priorities. In other words, things that are important. Because that's what you got to key on. Because once you understand what's important to them, if you really want to start building trust, building relationships, and which is the bedrock for everything, is healthy, strong relationships. You can't do anything in life without it. You have to make sure that you make yourself an available resource for their success in those areas of priorities. And the only way you understand that is if you listen. And that's whether you're trying to sell something, that's whether you're trying to, you know, do well at work. I don't care what it is. It's just understanding that. So I think the easiest thing to do out of all these signs and the quickest is really focus on that language, number five. Mm-hmm. So when you're listening to someone, try to pay attention. You know, as you're making sure that you're seeking their thoughts and opinions, you're talking in terms of what's important to them. You're not arguing with them, but you're validating them. In other words, seeking to understand, and if appropriate, giving them choices. Then what I'm looking for is I'm looking for the same from them. I'm looking for them asking me those types of questions as well. And also, you know, we can throw a little bit of nonverbals in this. And this, what we're looking for comfort. So when someone is doing right by me with the language you're using by making that conversation about me, I'm also looking for high comfort from them when they're doing it, versus stress. And we don't need to study the hundreds of tells, you know, body language from the tip of the head to the tip of the toes, because when you're paying that much attention to just the body, you're not going to hear all the words. And so what I'm always looking for mostly is in the facial area. So good high comfort things I'm looking for. I'm looking for eyebrow elevation, you know, instead of furrowed. I'm looking for some smiling, some head tilt, you know, so you're exposing the side of your neck, which is your carotid artery. So you're saying, I trust the world not to rip out my jugular. I'm looking for any basically ventral and open displays, palms up as they're talking, voices palms down, because that's saying, hey, I want to hear what you have to say. All these things where the body is up and out is a very good high comfort thing. Head nodding, acknowledging, all those things are fantastic. And so when you have those kind of nonverbals congruent with that good positive language that's focused on me, that's a good sign that, you know, this, it's quick and easy, and you can see, all right, we might have an opportunity to start seeing some of the other signs as well.
Yeah, that's awesome, man. That's a great place to start. And it's so good for understanding people and connecting with people. I can think back to like going on different dates in the past like few months, and like I'm looking for these kind of intuitively, just looking for these signs of like if the girl's like interested in the things I'm saying, if it's a good topic, if she's connecting with me, if she's like turned off, you can see that she kind of like turns away, she doesn't want to talk about a certain thing. Like there's always different things that you can pick up on people if you just study them. And I don't think, like you said, if you get down into this, it can be very confusing and overwhelming. But if you just kind of pick out things and just like naturally are more observant of things, it's a lot easier to understand people and understand which way you want the conversation to go and kind of steer things in as far as like building rapport and connection with somebody else.
Absolutely. You know, and the big thing I always talk about, you know, in this book and everything I do is, you know, there is so much depth, like you said, to each one of these six signs that I keep it printed out in front of me. I mean, that's a lot of tells for things. I have 10 tells for and 10 tells against for each of these six signs. And at least what I did in the book, which was the greatest thing I loved about it, was I was able to put a debriefing at the end of every chapter. So it summarizes the chapter's learning points so you can kind of refresh. But that being said, when I'm looking at people and assessing, you know, where the relationship is, I'm not looking for all six signs. If I have all six signs, it's fantastic. I honestly don't know if I've ever met anyone that is spiking great in all six signs. I'm looking for like one or two, because the whole point of this is what can I reasonably predict the person is going to do? Because I quickly defined trust is actually not trust. It's actually predictability, because trust, a lot of people will overlay their intuition on these things, which can be very, very dangerous, because basically people start associating liking someone with trusting someone. And just because you like someone doesn't mean you can trust them in every single area of their lives. For example, I got a great friend who is, and I think I use the example in the book that is a pilot. He's a great pilot, you know, and so I would trust him to fly me anywhere. I'm a pilot too, so I understand these things. But I also have another friend that I'm great friends with that I was in the FBI with. He's not a pilot. I like him and I trust him, but doesn't mean I can throw them keys to the plane and say, hey, I trust you to get us there from A to B safely. And that's like a lunacy.
Yeah.
So I quickly define, you know, the difference between liking someone and predicting someone, so that you can actually take the emotional part of liking someone, which is fantastic because you share common morals, ethics, and values and similar activities, but doesn't mean you can actually reasonably trust them to do certain specific things. So I try to keep those segregated, so again, you don't ruin that relationship just because they can't do one thing and you get angry.
Yeah, that's a hell of a point and definitely a good distinction to make. As far as predicting someone's behavior, though, can you be a little more specific on what you mean exactly by that phrase and why it is so important when it comes to interacting with other people?
It's not like I'm saying you can predict exactly what they're going to say and do necessarily, but I can predict trends basically, mm-hmm. You know, and again, and with the bedrock trend being that, hey, you're going to act in your own best interests. And so in order for me to figure out what you think is in your best interest, I got to understand what your priorities are. And then I got to understand what resources you think are available to you. And so once I understand those things, then I'm going to start be able to predict behavior or not be able to predict behavior. Here's a great example. When a number of years ago, you know, I was running our behavioral analysis program, and I was running it in 2013, and that's when sequestration hit the government. And I was told by my executive management that, hey, here's our priorities. We have priorities of finance, and we have priorities of personnel, and we're out of money, and we need personnel up at FBI headquarters instead of down at Quantico. And so my response was, because again, you talk in terms of people's priorities and you offer them resources. So my response was, okay, well, I don't need to get rid of the team. I can still run the team because I can do it with no money. So that's one of your priorities that's answered, because I can do all our consultations via Skype or something like that. And I've actually done the job up at FBI headquarters before, so I can actually do it remotely from down here if you need to. So both your issues are managed. They came back to me and said, no, we're disbanding it anyway. Well, that's a great example of there was a priority and an agenda that they hadn't shared with me, and actually was trying to take out a few people higher above me and using my team as an excuse. And so, all right, that's an unhealthy situation. And so you start making – good thing is it doesn't make it right or wrong. It just makes you understand, so you can start making choices.
It's totally true, man. And it's so important too, not to – like you said, you don't have to understand exactly what people are going to do or predict their behavior to the T, but I think having a good understanding of where they're heading and where their head's at is good to.
Yeah, and like in that situation, I guarantee, you know, there was at that point I knew there was nothing I could say or do that was going to change the outcome. That's predicting behavior.
Yeah.
So I now knew I was either going to make the choice for myself to either allow myself to get transferred back up to headquarters and try to train every day, or I had an opportunity to, you know, come back, you know, live, you know, work 5 miles from home, you know, and step back down out of management and do exactly what I was doing, you know, consulting on every day. So it was, you know, what happens is when you become self-aware about people's choices around you and their motivations, it gives you a bit more control of your life, because you're not guessing and hoping. Guessing and hoping, you know, destroy motivation in people. So this starts relieving that guesswork, because so here's another example too. You know, just a boss at work. I mean, how many people have faced a bully at work? You know, I think we all have, you know. So in there, what you're going to see when that is, you know, look at sign four. If I've seen someone bully someone and call them out on something and constantly shift up their priorities every day to keep people off balance, if we've seen him do it once, twice, or three times, I guarantee he's going to do it every day. If you go into work hoping he's going to be different, you're fooling yourself, and you're going to set yourself up for disappointment every single day.
We're now in 2020, and with the new year comes new opportunities. Make this the year you advance your career by earning your master's degree. Get started today at Ashford University. Ashford University is higher education at your own pace. It's a WSC-UC accredited institution that offers innovative online degree programs to help you achieve your higher education goals. Ashford University's flexible scheduling provides students with the opportunity to achieve higher education goals while still balancing work, home, and family life. Higher learning is more accessible than ever. Gain skills you can use in your job right now, and knowledge that prepares you for the market of tomorrow. We're all so busy nowadays, and our schedules are completely hectic, but the cool thing about Ashford University is that it allows you to study wherever you're comfortable learning and at your own pace. Ashford University's 6-week-long courses allow you to take one course at a time, and being enrolled in one class at Ashford means you are considered a full-time student. Plus, it's super easy enrollment. The GRE, GMAT, and other standardized test scores are not required for enrolling at Ashford University. Seriously, what's there not to love about Ashford University? It's convenient, it's flexible, it's super easy to enroll in it, and it helps you get to that next level in your career. So get ready to grab new opportunities. Start your master's degree today. Enroll by going to ashford.edu/eliteman. That's ashford.edu/eliteman to start your master's degree today. ashford.edu/eliteman. How quickly can you apply these skills if you do, say, just meet somebody new? Like if you're walking in the street, you come across a stranger, you go to a party, you just meet someone and you don't really know them. Like how quickly are these skills that you're talking about here able to be applied into your life? Can you size somebody up right away, or does it generally take a certain amount of time before you really get to know them?
I think there's aspects of it that you can size people up pretty rapidly in very small areas. And so what I'm always looking for first is, let's go back to that language thing. I'm looking for that language, you know, those four elements about where the focus is. Is the focus on them, or is the focus on me? And again, there's no right or wrong there. It just starts predicting what they're about. Are they about self-promotion, or are they about being a resource for others? And the other thing I'm looking for is here's what's really great. Every human being does this very well. Everyone walks into their office or wherever they work every day, and they know who exactly is having a bad day before anyone even opens their mouth. Do they not?
Yeah.
Yes. True. Because we've got this ancient reptilian brain, you know, in the back of our head that recognizes and establishes what baseline normal looks like. And so we pick up intuitively, you know, what abnormal looks like. And so we don't categorize it sometimes because we don't give it the labels and meanings. But if you start doing that actively, then then you can make a real good choice. And so in other words, what I'm looking for really rapidly is I'm looking for congruence between good positive words and positive interaction and those comfort nonverbal indicators, as opposed to stress indicators where someone's definitely uncomfortable with my presence or being in a situation, and they do that by either eyebrow compression, you know, where they're furrowing their eyebrow, compressing their lips almost to the extent to maybe sometimes they might even go into a frown. They're blocking, you know, they're blading their bodies away, they're leaning away from people, they're pulling away from people. You know, those are the types of things that of people that, all right, this person is not comfortable in this situation. I probably don't want to engage with them right now.
Yeah. So is the biggest one, or perhaps one of the only ones for sizing people up immediately, language? It sounds like language, but are there any of the other ones that you can use like immediately that work too?
Probably on the next one I would really focus on is stability, emotional stability. You know, when people are having conversations, what I'm looking for is I'm looking for someone who is actually thoughtfully taking in the information and not jumping to conclusions and got emotionally hijacked and having outbursts before they're contemplating or regarding the information they're taking in.
Yeah, so basically like a nutcase, you want to say.
No, just someone emotional. That's
But all right, so what do you do in those situations then when you do come across these types of people who are like super emotional? They don't have control of their feelings, their emotions, they're wearing their heart on their sleeve, and perhaps they're very unpredictable in a lot of ways, and their language is off. Like, how do you deal with those types of people and perhaps de-escalate?
If it's someone you have to continue to interact with, you know, and a lot of times that's what you have to do. The first thing I like to do is the best thing I love to do is try to get people thinking again. Mm-hmm. And so some of the first questions I'll ask is I never tell anyone what to do. You know, it's always about asking what I call discovery questions, because, you know, people are more likely to take actions if they come up with it on their own rather than you telling them what to do. And so I always start out by, you know, I see someone in distress in some way, is I simply ask, you know, so help me understand, what is it that you're trying to achieve? What's your goal here? What's your priority? What's your objective? Because most times what people are doing is they're reacting to the stimulus around them and not actually thinking through it. So if I can start asking them first, start thinking, what are you actually trying to do? So I can get some clarity on it as well. That actually slows them down and gets the forefront of the brain engaged again. And then when I actually hear what they come up with for their goals, objectives, and priorities, then I simply start at having them discover, all right, you know, help me understand, you know, you want to do X, Y, and Z, you're stating these things, are those things helping or hindering you getting to where it is you're trying to go? And how can I be a resource in that area? So that generally gets people slowed down in thinking.
Okay. Yeah, it sounds a lot too like Chris Voss and the hostage negotiation stuff that he talks about.
Yeah, I know Chris,
yeah. Yeah, do you know him? Have you worked with him?
Yeah, so he did some of the training with my team when I first came on way back when. Yeah, he's been doing that stuff a long time. He's also a wordsmith expert.
He's a wordsmith
expert? Wordsmithing expert, yes.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he's all about language. And it's funny, too. He sounds like, if you just listen to him and you didn't know what he was saying, you didn't know his credentials, he kind of just sounds like a regular guy with like a raspy kind of voice. But, right. And then you start listening to the guy, he's a genius. I mean, really, really smart. And the way he talks, it just like naturally has like a calming effect on people. It's like very low-key, under-the-radar type of thing. And I think it just works incredible, the way he does it. I know he's worked on that as well.
Oh, yeah. Voice, tenor, intonation, modulation, tempo. It all plays incredibly high. I mean, they did a study years ago. I cite a lot of times when I do my talks. You know, they put 15 guys on one side of these blacked-out screens, and they put 90 women on the other side. And each one of these 15 guys had to read the same paragraph. And each one of these 15 guys had different modulation, tenor, intonation, all those things. And afterwards, the females were asked to describe what they thought the person looked like and describe what they if they trusted them or not. And so without fail, the people that had a slower rate of speech than the person assessing and had that good modulation, the tenor, the vibrato, were 6'4", good looking, and very trustworthy.
Wow.
Voice. So because voice is part of nonverbal behavior as well.
Yeah. The tone of voice, right? The way you enunciate your words.
And so also what happens in that too. So when someone's under duress, so when you're baselining someone, you're getting a normal on their also their modulation and their tempo of voice. And so what happens is I'm looking for that as well in the first encounters. And all of a sudden, if someone's speech kind of goes monotone or flat or their tempo backs up or speeds up, then there's something, a stimulus of something that was interjected that was, you know, causing them a little bit of stress.
Yeah. So knowing all the information that you know about tone of voice and body language and all this other stuff. Have you, I'm sure you have, but have you applied these teachings to the way that you communicate with other people and the way you speak and talk and carry yourself? Like, what are some of the things that you make sure you always do when you're in different situations or you're trying to make a good impression with somebody?
I wish I was better at it, but you know, I always say my books are my manuals on how not to be the moron I was born to be. So the things I'm always trying to do is, one, I'm always trying to make the conversation about the other person. Again, I can't overemphasize that enough, you know, because seeking their thoughts and opinion. In other words, a lot of times when we're interacting with someone, we want to give them information. We want to share something with them. And I'm always thinking of, like, how can I, instead of convincing them to listen to me, how can I inspire them to want to listen to me? And that's why I'm always trying to phrase everything instead of telling them something. I'm trying to phrase it as a question about what they think about it. The example I'd like to use is, you know, we can use politics without using politics. Say you watch CNN and I watch Fox. You know, right there, everyone says, you know, you're going to be on two different sides of the aisle, right?
Yeah.
And as soon as I hear you say something, the first reaction I'm going to have is, that's not what I think. Here's what I think. And shields are up. You know, guaranteed you're not going to hear any words coming out of my mouth. As opposed to, how can I inspire you to at least want to listen to me? After you tell me your point of view, I'm then going to seek your thoughts and opinions. But I said, wow, I haven't heard it quite put that way before. Help me understand. How did you come up with that? Again, I'm seeking your thoughts and opinions. After you share your thoughts and opinions, I'm going to then validate it by saying, wow, again, you've given me so much more to think about. I really appreciate that. I'm curious, what do you think about this? And now I ask your opinion about what it is I want to tell you. I guarantee you're going to hear it.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I always say you don't plant seeds with people by telling them what you think. You plant seeds with people by asking them what they think.
Yeah, that's a great way to put it. I didn't really think of it that way. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. So
it's disarming.
It is very disarming because, again, you're taking the focus off of yourself and making it about them. I mean, this all started years and years ago when I was first in the Marine Corps. I got, you know, I was ranked last out of all the second lieutenants there, 14 of us. And I remember going to my major and saying, all right, sir, I get it. I'm doing something wrong. I suck. And I go, what can I do better? And he goes, you just need to be a better leader. I was like, all right, that's helpful. How? And he goes, you need to make it about everyone else but yourself. That's what leaders do. And I was like, I thought I was. How do I do that? And he goes, I don't know. Just figure it out. Do it. Well, this is how you do it. You know, because that's what people want. You know, people don't care about your title and position. They care about how you make them feel about themselves, not how you make them feel about you. And you do that by those four things: seeking their thoughts and opinions, talking in terms of their priorities, validating them, giving them choices. As a matter of fact, the giving choices one is really powerful. I once worked for a Marine Corps colonel. He's fantastic. He told me, never tell me no, only tell me yes. But tell me what it'll cost me. That was profound.
That is cool. Yeah.
And so when I combine those things with looking for congruence with the good comfort nonverbals, verbals, that's what I'm doing. No, and the other thing I'm also doing is another guarantee is everyone's working on something. Everyone's got some sort of insecurity. So I ignore insecurities. I ignore the things that I think you're bad at. I'm always seeking your greatness because everyone's got greatness. So I'm always focusing on what you're doing well. The other thing, too, is I'm always discovering what is important to you and discovering your priorities.
I love that. Focus on the greatness and avoid the insecurities. You're right. That's so cool. That's such a profound one too as well. So as far as the choices though, how does that actually look in, say, like a real conversation with somebody? Because that seems like a really powerful tool as well. Can you give us a quick like example of what a conversation might look like?
For me, in my own line of work, you know, a way I always empowered someone with choice was, you know, I'd kind of lay out what my priorities were and lay out what I was hoping they'd want to do. And then I'd end it with, if that's something you're comfortable with.
Yeah,
it's like, you know, if I wanted someone to attend a conference somewhere that was going overseas, you know, I'd say, hey, here's what our objective is. Here's what I think we could gain from it. You know, I think we could really do a lot of good things for national security. If that's something you're comfortable with, again, if that's something you're comfortable with, it's a choice. If I wanted to get together and try to offer a product or service, I said, hey, you know, if you're comfortable with it, maybe over the next 3 months, we get together for a couple cups of coffee. If you want, we can meet here at Starbucks. We can meet at my office, or we can meet at your office. What's best for you? Again, that's an empowerment with choice because you're saying, hey, I value you. I value your opinion. And the final one is, if you understand what your goals and priorities are and you understand what the other person's goals and priorities are, if you give them like two or three choices, I guarantee you those things are going to overlap and they're willing and they'll most likely pick one of them. And you don't offer people choices unless they're good for you as well. So,
yeah.
Covert. Each one of those scenarios works well.
Yeah. No,
yeah,
for sure.
But that's what goes back to that Marine Corps colonel. He says, don't tell me no, tell me yes, just tell me what it cost me. So I gave him a cost-benefit analysis of every single choice, but every choice I gave him, I'd be fine with too.
Yeah, dude, that's awesome. As far as like your body language itself, the way, you know, you're carrying yourself, physically in your appearance, how does that look and what are you trying to do as well with that?
It really depends on the situation. I have a couple different, you know, looks I'm trying to get across in certain things. You know, like if I'm doing a higher end speech or something, I'll definitely wear my French cut shirt. I'll wear my nicer suit. Colors I'm always going for, though, I always go for blues. Believe it or not, colors actually play into these are not like things that'll make or break deals, but I call them pebbles in a bucket to tilt the scales. And so blue is a very trusting color. So I generally will use wear blues because blues are good for trust.
What shade of blue, like a navy blue or any type of blue?
I'm kind of a lighter blue.
Okay, cool.
Darker blue is kind of a little harsh. But again, that's me, because what I'm trying, because again, I have a, not everyone, the basic thing that you have to do is you have to understand how other people see you and what you resonate when you interact with people, and ask yourself, is that what I want them to, the impression to be, or do I want it to be, or do I need to be something different? So me, you know, I'm this hard charging type Marine that looks intense. And so I got to mitigate intense. And so I got to make sure I'm wearing, you know, softer colors. Luckily for me, I do when I talk, I do speak with my palms up naturally. Some people like the steeple where they put their fingertips together. It's a high dominance and high confidence display. That can be intimidating for some people.
Yep. Yeah.
When I shake hands, I just match. I don't do the double hand grab. Some people can see that as attempt of control. So I'll match the strength. And actually, when I offer my hand to shake, I do a palm up offering, kind of like a people go to church ever, you know, generally when a priest or pastor or whatever is at the door at the end of the service, you know, they shake hands with their palms up.
Yeah.
So I generally offer my handshake with a palm up.
Nice. Yeah. So a lot of these things for you are actually probably what most think are the opposite. Most people would think of the opposite of what someone in your position would do, because you're trying most of the time do powerful things, but you cut it back. You dial it back because you don't want to seem like over powerful, over dominant. That type of thing, right?
I've done it both ways. You know, it's a funny thing is I've seen, you know, I naturally want to, you know, fix problems with a baseball bat given my background. But, think about it. It's the highest stake sales game you can potentially do. I am selling a product called American Patriotism to someone. If he buys it, is from a foreign country, and he and his family could get killed if they're discovered. You know, so you can't convince anyone in that situation to do that. All you have to do, you have to inspire them that they can trust you. And also, how do you recruit someone? I always say you don't. All, you know, everyone that I've ever interacted with that, you know, decided to, you know, help with American patriotism, all they were doing was, one of their priorities was either a dying wish from a parent or a grandparent was that their children wouldn't grow up under such a horrible regime and they'd have future opportunities for safety, security, and prosperity for their families. You know, so all I was the impetus for them being able to do that. And along with that, they have to feel safe and secure and trust. And so if you go in with a really aggressive idiot attitude, they're going to walk right away.
Yeah, that's so true.
And same thing in sales. I mean, people, you know, how many times, you know, does everyone, you know, almost every single product in the world, you know, there's so little variance between, you know, product A to product Z, mm-hmm. you know, but what does it come down to? I pay for service. You know, if someone knows how to communicate with me, make it about me, you know, and it's a few bucks more because they actually put their people through training to, you know, make sure that they know how to take care of their customers, I'm going that route. I mean, the people I use, the plumbers in my house, the HVAC people in my house, they're not the cheapest, but I'll tell you what, they know me by name, they know my equipment, they take care of me well, and that's it comes down to brand loyalty, and you create brand loyalty by making it about them.
Yeah, so true. Your next book should be a business book for sure, because it's dead on. And I think a lot of people are missing the point in that regard too, when it comes to, say, online marketing or online branding. The ones that are really successful get it 100% and they know all about it. But some of the other ones are kind of getting lost in that shuffle because they're not focusing on the customer and what they want and what's going to actually be beneficial to them, as opposed to just trying to sell a bunch of products to a bunch of people.
The great ones do, though. I mean, yeah. I've been... You know, the couple of companies I just worked with recently, they are, the last one I was in Canada for, they were so focused on making the customer experience such a high level that they do annual training multiple times a year for customer experience. And then another company I worked with in New York was also fantastic because their whole – I love their mantra because they're in an industry that's hard to get people to work, you know, because they need automotive technicians, you know, which is a hard skill to get people to want to do. But so their whole mantra is create a place where people want to work first, and then second, be a place where customers come back. You know, that's perfect. And how do you do that? By demonstrating these things.
That's pretty cool. And I think a lot of the big ones get it too, like Google and Apple. I mean, They basically sell the same type of product as like HP and some of the other ones, but they charge like 3-4 times more, and they're the most profitable company in the world for a reason. People love their stuff. They wait in line for hours and hours when a new product comes out. I mean, they got it down pat 100%. Yeah, it's incredible. I do want to touch on a few of the things that you mentioned in the book. And just kind of sort of like a rapid fire type of thing. Like,
sure.
Like I said, there's so much great information in here, but you can apply it to so many different avenues of life. And some of the ones that popped out to me when I was reading through the book and just kind of doing some of the notes, how can you tell if you are about to be fired or promoted at work?
All right. That one, I would say baseline deviation is starting to occur. In other words, you've been going along, you know, for weeks, months, years there, and you know what normal looks like from your boss, and all of a sudden you start being excluded from situations, excluded from meetings. Your boss is avoiding eye contact with you, chastising you in front of others, maybe not giving you projects anymore. You know, so this is a sign that you know something has shifted in the perception of you, and you have a couple choices in this situation. One, have a conversation about it and say, listen, I think things have kind of gone sideways. I'm not quite sure what I'm doing wrong, but help me understand what they are so I can correct it and be a resource for you, or get ready to move on.
Okay, easy enough. How about whether your relationship is on the rocks, even if your spouse is telling you that everything's good, everything's fine, how do you figure out if it's actually not fine?
Again, I can't overemphasize baselining people more times than not. You know, I'll give you an example in my own house. My wife and I, we've been married going on 27 years, I think.
Nice.
And, you know, a long time. You know, our kids are off in college doing exceptionally well. We get along really, really well. But her mode of interaction a lot of times, when she starts getting angry, is she gets quiet. And so I remember not too long ago, she decided she wanted to go out for a walk. And that was such a deviation from the baseline that she wanted to do it by herself and not bring me along. I was like, nope, there's something wrong here. You're not going anywhere till we talk. Because again, what I'm looking for a change in behavior, because I like to poke at it. I like to try to understand what change of behavior, because if it's me, I want to make amends. I want to make it right.
Yeah, that goes back to the actions one, huh? Just seeing what their actions are and if it's different
absolutely
from their other actions.
Yeah. Absolutely. And then all these things, too, because what you're doing is you're baselining the amount of conversations where they're vested in your future together. If you establish normal routines like longevity, routines like if you go out on date night every Friday night and all of a sudden you stop doing that. You know, reliability may or may not come into that, you know, play there, but actions definitely do. Language, you know, they had a pattern of where they normally, interact with you, where there's a balance between how much they talked about themselves and shared their thoughts and opinions and where they sought yours, you know, and then the emotional stability, has that shifted? You know, so, you know, and again, doesn't mean it's you that's the problem. Just means that if any of these baselines from what normal is for you have deviated, that means there's something going on in this person's life. You might be inflicting it, or someone else might be inflicting it. So, you know, reach out, touch, and see what you can do to be a resource for their success.
Yeah, you kind of touched upon it a little bit too, but what is the best approach to reaching out at that point if you do recognize and you know that something is off, something's going on? Like, what's the best way to approach that person and try to fix things or try to amend things from whatever's going on?
Everyone's different on this one. This is where you got to keep the really big focus on them. Most people just want to be heard. They don't want to be fixed.
Yeah.
And so it comes down to validation and seeking to understand and listen and letting them know that, hey, I am here for you when you need me here. I'm here for you with resources if you need them.
Yeah.
My son is this, you know, I do this with my son. My son's also at the Naval Academy, and it's a very stressful environment. And, you know, I'd say 99% of the time when we talk every day, you know, he's sharing things with me that are frustrating. And the last thing in the world I want to do, because sometimes it makes him angry, is tell him how to fix it. Is that just flies him off the hammer.
Really? Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And so a lot of times I just say, that sounds really tough, Kevin. That's a really challenging situation. And then I ask him, what kind of things do you think you can do about that?
Yeah.
So again, you could keep putting it back on them, you know, so you validate it, and then you seek their thoughts and opinions about what they think they can do about it.
That's great, man. I love that. A couple more real quick ones. Determine whether someone is invested in you, whether they want you to succeed or whether they want you to fail. What's the easiest way to pinpoint that?
Opportunities they present you.
Yeah.
You know, I think that's really, you know, whether it's a, you know, like I got a friend of mine that, you know, is, as I said, he's a pilot, and all things he's always trying to do is get us together so we can go fly together at his expense, because he likes getting together. Mm-hmm. He likes having fellowship, you know, so he likes grabbing lunch every couple weeks together. You know, those are good signs. At work, you know, they're giving you those opportunities for promotion, advancement, education, learning. It's those types of situations. It's inclusiveness with coworkers. Are they including you, you know, with, you know, office traditions, you know, and working groups and things like that, or not? You know, so those are really easy signs.
Yeah. Can it be deceptive, though, if someone is doing, say, those types of things, but they're not really invested in your best interest? They're just kind of trying to manipulate you in some way. Is there a way to pinpoint that as opposed to them actually really being invested in you?
Again, this is where I'm going to be looking for the congruence between a nonverbal behavior. So if they're giving me, and they're saying all the right things, but they're demonstrating every time they're interacting with me. Basically, so you look at how they interact with other people and seeing if they're, you know, what kind of nonverbal baseline they have between comfort and stress with the other people they're saying these things to. And then I'm going to look at how they're interacting with me. If it's the same baseline, then it's most likely, you know, fine. But if it's changing when they're interacting with me but still doing the same thing, then there might be something there. But then what I'm also testing is transparency. So if there's something I'm having a question on and I seek for clarification of the things they're sharing with me, and they're not telling me the full story, or they're using subterfuge, or they're kind of misdirecting the question another way, that means there's an issue there.
Yeah, that's cool. There's a lot there, but it's, you know, break that down and you can get a lot out of it, I'm sure. Couple more that are related. How to determine whether someone is trustworthy or whether they are being deceptive? I mean, it's kind of related to that, what we just talked about. And then the follow-up to that is how to become more trustworthy to someone else, which we also touched upon earlier. But what's a couple of quick ones make you more trustworthy?
Again, I'm going to keep the emphasis on the same things I've been saying. You want to make sure you're making the conversation about them by seeking their thoughts and opinions, talking in terms of their priorities, validating, giving them choices, and then making sure that your nonverbals are congruent with that. In other words, you're emotionally curious, because that I think the easiest way to – I mean, this whole process, and I mentioned in the book, I call it stempathy. It's a combination of stoicism, where it's basically understanding cause and effect of your behaviors on the behaviors of others, but massive empathy, because this is all about understanding others at a deep level. And so it's a congruence of your body language and your emotion with the things you're saying builds that trust and making it about them. And again, my three things that are my three anchors to making sure that these things are working well with my behaviors is, one, I always ask myself, is everything I'm about to say or do going to help or hinder a healthy relationship? Two is open, honest communication and transparency, because you can't have the healthy relationship without that. And three, I make myself an available resource for the success and prosperity of others without expectation or reciprocity. So you do those three things, you will start developing trust.
Nice. Robin, are you a good chess player?
I suck.
Because what you have done and what you've explained throughout the episode is basically like you're an incredible real-life chess player of understanding people and understanding their moves and seeing what they're going to do ahead of time, like a couple of moves ahead of them. But you know, if you have just pieces on a board, it's a lot different. You can't get all those clues and information that you need.
You know, and the real key to this is, do not allow anyone to bother you in your life. In other words, don't be angry or resentful or frustrated with anyone. If I have anyone that enters my life and causes that kind of emotion, that's my problem. In other words, they're doing something in my presence that becomes annoying. It's generally an insecurity that is flared up in their life. And so what I try to do is I try to understand why they have the behavior they have. So I infuse curiosity to try to understand the person, because once I understand their context, it doesn't mean that the behavior is right or appropriate. It just means I understand why they have it. That acceptance skyrockets. And when no one bothers you in your life, then life's easy, because there's no drama. I've refused to do drama, because drama clouds the brain with all the negative emotions.
Man, there's so much great information in here. I know our guys are going to love this one. What is a final send-off takeaway message you'd like to leave the Elite Man audience, and then a place our listeners can check out your book and your work?
Sure. I think leaving everyone with two things you can start doing right away in your life to start interacting with people in a really good, positive, healthy way that will make changes. One, focus on their strengths. Discover the strengths of the people you interact with, at least one. And when every time you engage them, start off by validating that strength. In other words, find out more about it. Talk about it. Second, discover their priorities, what their needs, wants, dreams, and aspirations are, and start linking in your mind what kind of resources you can deliver to them in terms of those priorities. You start doing those two things, I guarantee you relationships are going to start building with trust.
Love it. And what's the website and link and stuff?
Sure. Yep. Everything for me can go through peopleformula.com, all one word, peopleformula.com. Got lots more videos on there, YouTube, you know, stuff of me doing keynotes, and I call Death by Robin.
Nice. Guys, make sure you check out his website, also his book, Sizing People Up. Robin, thanks again for coming on, man. I really do appreciate it, and I know our guys are going to love this one, so take care, and I'll talk to you soon.
All right. Thank you very much, too. Bye-bye.
All right, guys, I hope you enjoyed that episode. But before you go, there's one last thing I'd like you to do, and that's this. Subscribe to our podcast right now if you haven't already. By subscribing to the podcast, you get every single episode the minute they're released. Get all of our Elite Man podcast episodes and all of our world-class advice absolutely free. Subscribe now if you haven't already and become an Elite Man today. And yes, if you do love the podcast, leave us an amazing review. We really do appreciate it.
The first taste of rare bourbon you finally got your hands on. That's nice. At Caskers.com, we make this experience easy. Caskers is a one-stop spirit curator with an impressive selection of exclusive, sought-after, rare, and household names in the realm of premium spirits and champagne. Discover the top flavors of the year now by going to Caskers.com and using code WELCOME10 for $10 off your first purchase. Get $10 off your first purchase with code WELCOME10 at Caskers.com.